fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedell filling in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the September 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. On Tuesday's show, we talked about some grueling athletic endeavors, my own long-distance runs and bike rides from over the weekend, and the upcoming Four Rangers Ultra Marathon coming up 2 weeks from now in Kenya. We're going to chat today about what I'm calling marathon season as the Northern Hemisphere leaves the sweltering summer temperatures and heads to the fall, where the days should be quite a lot cooler. But before that, we've got big news out of the last tennis major of 2019. That's the U.S. Open going on at Arthur Ashe Stadium in Queens, where the sport's two biggest names, Roger Federer and Serena Williams, were on the court Tuesday night. But first, let's take a look at some sports news coming from Africa, as our friend Iron Mike Mbonye has this report on the second leg of the women's soccer Olympic qualifying match between Nigeria's Super Falcons and Algeria. Sporty greetings, Mike.
Nigeria's women's national football team, also known as the Super Falcons, have qualified for the next round of African qualifying series for the 2020 Olympics Women Football Tournament. Nigeria beat Algeria 1-0 in a match played in Lagos on Tuesday and 3-0 on aggregate, having won the Algerians 2-0 away. The Super Falcons missed some scoring chances in the early minutes of the game as Algerian goalkeeper Kahina Teknint made good saves. Algerian forward Yasmin Benlaza threatened the Nigerians as her header sailed over the bar with 6 minutes to the end of the first half. Asisat Oshoala, Nigeria and Barcelona FC forward, scored the only goal of the encounter in the 57th minute after collecting a pass from midfielder Francisca Odega. Algerian coach Bettina Kamel says he is proud of his team despite losing to the 9-time African champions. Kamel, who spoke through an interpreter, says the team did well and considered a goal through a mistake.
In the first half, we were able to contain them. Even with their star players, we were able to compete with them. Unfortunately, we gave them a goal on a mistake that we did. So, and we also missed a couple of occasions that we had. We are proud of what we did. We competed with a team that went to the World Cup, and we were able to contain them for the whole game.
Nigerian coach Thomas Denabi says he's not happy with the game because his team did not play as expected.
From my point of view, I'm not satisfied with the game. We came from us. Of course, I'm happy to win and don't concede any goal, but our passing game, our moving, so the speed, everything was not in the pace that you can expect from this team.
So what went wrong?
Yeah, that's a good question. It's often very hard to answer that exactly in the same moment when the whistle comes, but maybe we were a little bit, I will not say lazy, but a little bit calm, a little bit too relaxed with a 2-0 from the away game that we think, yes, we will handle this. So
Venabi says the team will put up a good performance in their next match. Nigeria's Minister of Youth and Sports, Sunday Dare, who led some government officials to watch the match, says the win is a confirmation of Nigeria's superiority in women football in Africa.
I think this game again confirms the superiority of our female teams. In Morocco, the under-20 won gold for the first time in 12 years. Today, we also saw the class of soccer they played, a high level of competency and professionalism. So it shows that we have the commanding power of the female soccer on the African continent.
Nigeria will play Cote d'Ivoire in the next qualifying match of the 2020 Olympics Women Football Tournament. For the Sunny Side of Sports, this is Ayo Mike Mbonye in Lagos.
Thank you, Mike. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. Continuing with sports news involving African teams, let's check in on the ongoing FIBA Men's Basketball World Cup in China. We had a handful of African teams playing on Wednesday, including Nigeria's the Tigers, who defeated South Korea 108-66. Michael Eric, a professional in Europe who played for Philadelphia's Temple University, led Nigeria with 17 points. Ike Diogu, a former NBA pro who now plays in China, added 16 points, and Al-Farouq Aminu scored 9. Nigeria pulled away in the second and third quarters, outscoring South Korea by a combined score of 62-35. In other action involving African teams, Angola defeated the Philippines, Poland defeated Ivory Coast, and Puerto Rico narrowly defeated Tunisia 67-64. Three pre-tournament favorites, Spain, Argentina, and Serbia, all won. Those three teams are undefeated so far, standing at 3-0. Speaking of basketball in Africa, a recent training camp in the South Sudan capital of Juba focused on getting young people involved in sports. The three-day camp, led by professional coaches and scouts, was aimed at teaching basketball and leadership skills to South Sudanese kids, with an eye toward identifying children with talent for eventual opportunities locally or internationally. Ding Magot has this story for VOA from Juba.
The searing hot sun did not stop 50 South Sudanese boys from training at Juba Manute's Ball Stadium with Masai Ujiri, president of the Toronto Raptors basketball team and founder of Giants of Africa, a non-profit that empowers Africa's youth through basketball. Ujiri says he wants to create awareness and support for underprivileged boys and young men who ordinarily will not be given the chance to train with professionals.
The camps are things that we try to spread around Africa. Yeah, we're going to try and come back to as many countries as we can. It's challenging sometimes because this is something that we do in the summer and we're trying to figure out ways to sustain it during the year. But our camps are mostly during the summer in August, and we come and spend 3 days in every country. And we try to teach them, provide them with basketball facilities, whether it's basketball, shoes, gear, and also the coaching.
This year, Giants of Africa held camps in Morocco, Mali, Somalia, Cameroon, and South Sudan. Ujiri says all the players in the various camps are in school. He says Giants of Africa believes education is critically important for all kids.
A lot of these kids, you know, like we stay in touch with them and we try to help them to get into schools wherever it is, whether it's on the other side or in the States or in Canada or schools here. The first thing I asked when I spoke to the kids is how many of them are in school, you know, and we need to know these things because education is such a big part of what their lives are going to be. It's very, very, like, this much are going to make it to the NBA, you know, like, but it's this much that are going to be people and persons of the world.
72% of South Sudanese are illiterate, according to UNICEF. Michael Achuel, the director of operations for the Manute Ball Basketball Program at the Luol Deng Foundation, says the foundation often selects players who show resilience and a competitive drive.
You bring somebody who know a little bit how to play. So that's how we make a selection. You gotta bring somebody that will play, they will not have fun. You get frustrated and learning a new things.
16-year-old Daniel Akwid Garang is a senior 4 student in Juba. Akwid says he has played basketball in Guatemala and Kenya, but really appreciates what he has learned at the camp in Juba.
It's very important because it helps us improve our shooting, dribbling skills, and also it helps us in defending and help us also to run faster. And I really think that's going to benefit South Sudanese because it will give an opportunity for the people who are coming so they can, the local people here can have an opportunity to go outside and play outside in a different career, not exactly here in South Sudan.
15-year-old Matet Taban Matet is a Form 2 student studying in Uganda who says he has trained and played in Uganda and Kenya, but also sees the camp as a great opportunity.
What I'm benefiting from this camp, it makes me improve on my shooting, my jumping power, and my handles. What I'm benefiting from basketball is free education. My goal in future is to be a player, and I also want to be a lawyer.
Masai Ujiri says the camp creates a peaceful environment that brings kids together from different places for healthy competition, but perhaps more importantly, inspires them to dream big. This is the first time Ujiri has visited South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Ding Magot in Juba.
Thank you, Ding. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young in Washington, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. My VOA colleague Gwen Uten is here with this recap from a busy night at the U.S. Open that featured Serena Williams and Roger Federer. Sporty greetings, Gwen.
Sporty greetings, Dan. The raucous crowd inside Arthur Ashe Stadium who came in support of Federer was stunned into silence as they watched him suffer a 5-set defeat Tuesday night. This marks the second loss for Federer in as many months. He fell to Novak Djokovic at this year's Wimbledon final in July. Now, fans are left wondering if the 38-year-old will ever hoist a Grand Slam trophy again. Federer spoke to reporters following the loss and expressed his frustration at another missed opportunity.
Just low, you know, just disappointed it's over, because I did feel like I was actually playing really well after the couple of rocky starts. And, you know, it's just a missed opportunity to some extent, you know, that you're in the lead, you can get through, you have 2 days off after. It was looking good, you know, but got to take the losses, you know. Part of the game, and looking forward to family time and all that stuff, so life's all right.
Before the start of the final deciding set, Federer took a medical timeout for what he later said was treatment for his upper back. That break, however, did not work to his advantage. Federer could not regain control of the match and later said he wasn't able to defend himself against his relentless opponent.
Well, I thought, he was tough off the baseline. He mixed up well, which gave me all sorts of problems with the rhythm, and could never really feel comfortable off the baseline. And that's something in the past I've always been able to dominate, I'd say. So that was not the case tonight. So he did a good job there.
Federer still holds the all-time record for the most Grand Slam singles titles with 20. He told reporters he has an aggressive competitive schedule coming up, and he'll have another shot at extending his Grand Slam record at the upcoming Australian Open. Meanwhile, Grigor Dimitrov has scored the biggest win of his career. Tuesday marked the first time he's beaten Federer in the 8 matches they have now played. The unseeded Belgian, who has been dubbed Baby Fed due to the similarities between his game and Federer's, was once ranked number 3 in the world. He entered the tournament amid the worst slumps of his career, but now he's reached his first semifinal at the U.S. Open. Dimitrov is no doubt hoping to continue his momentum in his upcoming match against Russian Daniil Medvedev on Friday. In Wednesday quarterfinal action, Italian Matteo Berrettini is set to face Frenchman Gael Monfils. And later that day, Argentine Diego Schwartzman will face Rafael Nadal. So stay tuned for those results on Thursday's show. On the women's side, Serena Williams claimed her 100th win at the U.S. Open. And it was business as usual. It took her only 44 minutes to ease into the semis with a straight set win against China's Wang Chang. Serena's dominance on the court prevented Wang from hitting any winners. And after the match, the 6-time U.S. Open champion said she did not want to give her opponent any chances.
No, you know, I've been working on my speed and getting shots, and, you know, I didn't give her too many chances in the match, so... Yeah, it was just that's a good stat for me. So it's good because I want to be able to move around the court, which I move when I want to move. So I guess I wanted to move tonight.
Serena will next take on 5th-seed Ukrainian Elena Svitolina, a tough opponent that Serena has beaten 4 times, but who she lost to at the 2016 Rio Olympics. Their semifinal match will be on Friday. And stay tuned for the results of Wednesday's women's quarterfinals. The opening match will be between Switzerland's Belinda Bencic and Croatian Dana Vekic. And following that, Canadian Bianca Andreescu will face Elise Mertens of Belgium. And that's all from me. More sporting news to come. Dan, back over to you.
Thank you, Gwen. I'm Dan Friedel, filling in for Sonny Young, and you're listening to The Sunny Side of Sports on The Voice of America. The first big international marathon on the horizon comes in Berlin, Germany on September 29th, followed by the 42nd year of the Chicago Marathon on October 13th. And then as the calendar turns to November, we'll see the runners traverse all five boroughs of New York City on the first Sunday of that month. The events are all part of the Abbott World Marathon Majors series. And we're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Tim Hadzima, the executive director of the series, for a preview of the upcoming races. Welcome to the show, Tim.
Thanks so much for having me.
So, Tim, I talked with our listeners on Tuesday's show about my recent 6-mile run along the monuments and the National Mall here in Washington, D.C. Now, it's one of my personal longest runs, going for just over an hour without stopping. But I can't imagine what these world-class athletes must feel like at the end of 2-plus hours of running at their super fast pace. So as someone who's seen these athletes run up close and personal, what is it like to see them running at that tempo in the 23rd or 24th of 26 miles?
I mean, it's just amazing to see these great athletes that come from all over the world to celebrate marathoning, to celebrate running. But yeah, it's amazing to see the pace they can keep for that amount of distance. It's impressive from an athletic point of view. It's impressive from a human performance point of view. So yeah, it's pretty amazing to see the fact that they can run that fast for that far. And then you also have, you know, runners that are after them that are running marathons in 4, 5, 6, 7 hours, which is also just incredibly impressive to see.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, earlier this year, I was in Tokyo just visiting, and I went on a 10-mile jogging tour of Tokyo. And that took me about 2.5 hours stopping to see the sights and take some photos, and to just think that I did, not even a half marathon distance in the same time that the world-class runners do the entire marathon. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, you know, I think that's one of the exciting things about our sport in general in marathoning, is that the general amateur athlete is able to share the roads on the day that someone at the front of the field might break a world record or break a course record or a national record. So it's one of those rare moments in sports that you can actually share that playing field, if you will, and accomplish that same feat, maybe in a little bit of a different way. But the distance is still the distance, no matter how far and how quick, no matter how quick you run it. So it's fun to be a part of it.
Yeah, Tim, I was going to ask you that very same question. I mean, I just was working last night at the Washington Nationals Stadium, Nats Park, down here in D.C., and you know, I've been lucky enough to work at sporting events and be on the field at, soccer matches and NFL stadiums and that sort of thing. But, you know, most people will never step up to bat at Yankee Stadium or get on the pitch at Wembley. But here you have, you know, like 40,000 people are going to be at the Berlin Marathon coming up in a few weeks, and they're going to be on the same roads as these international top caliber athletes. It's like a personal milestone for the people that do it, and it must be just pretty incredible experience to cross the finish line. Like, what are some of your favorite images that you can remember about seeing the average people cross the finish line at these marathons?
Yeah, I mean, the fun part is that there's nothing average about it, right? So it's a true celebration of all of these cities, and definitely in Berlin coming up in a couple weeks. I mean, there's no more exciting starting line than the Berlin Marathon, the BMW Berlin Marathon. It's the energy. They have a DJ that gets everybody pumped up doing calisthenics and dancing around. But yeah, at the end of the day, each of our races at the Abbott World Marathon Majors is an unbelievable tour of each of the cities, and then when folks have the ability to be celebrated around 26.2 miles of these great international destinations, crossing that finish line, there's just simply nothing like it. And, you know, specifically in Berlin, finishing right past the Brandenburg Gate, it's one of those incredible moments in our sport. And really, when you finish that race and you cross that finish line, whether you were first in the middle somewhere in the, you know, at the end of it, we try to treat those folks like true champions because they've all accomplished something, whether it's their first marathon or their 100th marathon. It's just an amazing feat. And we try to celebrate each runner individually and then as a group to be a part of something so special and see all the amazing performances, whether it's the wheelchair athletes or our elite runners like we've talked about, or our six-star finishers that have finished all potentially six of our events. It's another level, and there's so many great ways to celebrate.
We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Tim Hadzima, the executive director of the Abbott World Marathon Majors Series. And here we are. This is like marathon season for me. I mean, a lot of people here in the United States are getting excited about the start of the National Football League season on Thursday. But we're really right in the heart of it with three of the world's biggest marathons coming up, basically back to back to back, September, October, and November. But for our listeners who might not be that familiar with the Marathon Majors series, can you explain a little bit about how it works and what the inspiration was for creating a sequence of races for the top class of runners to compete in throughout the year?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that our series was started back in 2006 was exactly that, was a way to bring together and promote the elite side of the sport. Because like we talked about before, some of the athletes that we have at the top of the leaderboard are some of the most amazing athletes on the planet. And it was a way to celebrate them, bringing them together at the largest and most renowned races in the world. As we've progressed, as we've grown, as we've looked at the totality of the field, it for us now is not only about the elite athletes, it's also about celebrating those everyday champions, those everyday athletes. So we do have a program that runs, if you've run all six of our events in your lifetime, you get a special medal at the finish line, which is now over 6,000 people have done that, grown from around 400 or so about 5 years ago. So that program has just taken off. We also have the Abbott World Marathon Majors WANDA Age Group World Rankings, which is a way for the athletes that are 40 years old and older to be ranked globally across 50 events as a part of our Series 12, which ends in Berlin here in September. So the way that our series works is for all of those programs, we have a start and a finish to our series. So it goes this year in Berlin, it ends. So it started last year in Berlin, which is our Series 12. So Berlin to Berlin. Then we moved to Chicago, and it goes from Chicago 2019 to Chicago 2020, and so on and so forth. Really moving that spotlight to an international great race and city destination for our folks to be celebrated. But yeah, for us, it's all about celebrating the runners in these great international cities, celebrating life and the ability that, you know, that we all have to get out and enjoy these great races, great courses, great cities. And really it's putting that spotlight on each of these races, which is the intent.
So just quickly, in the upcoming event in Berlin, which is the end of Series 12, are there runners there that have a chance to overtake the current leader? Are we possibly going to see somebody jump from third place to first place by the end of the race coming up in a few weeks?
Yeah, potentially. On the women's elite side, Glass Chirono has an opportunity to do that, as well as Vivian Chariot. And Vivian's from Kenya, and you know Glass is also from Kenya. So you know they have an incredible chance to be able to get to the top of our leaderboard on the women's side, which is currently Bridget Koskaj, who will be running at the Bank of America Chicago Marathon in October. So it gives them an opportunity, absolutely, to possibly win our title, which is obviously a great and big deal for them.
So, Tim, real quick, I just wanted to get a sense of how this fits into the Olympic season. We've got the Olympics coming up in less than a year, maybe 15 seconds to tell us how these runners are factoring these races into their Olympic prep.
Yeah, it really is all about looking at the calendar and seeing what works for them. So the Olympics actually do count in our series as we go from city to city. So we do take those races into account, but it's really looking across the board, really the spring and fall season and seeing how
Thank you, fits. Tim. That wraps up the September 4th edition of the Sunny Side of Sports. Thank you for listening. I'm Dan Friedel in Washington.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa.
On the next Straight Talk Africa, education has the power to transform the lives of people worldwide, especially in Africa. But often, educational practices are outdated. Rethinking education on the next Straight Talk Africa.
Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
What's happening, Africa? This is Jackson Bungani in Washington, D.C.
And I'm Nadia Sami in Johannesburg, South Africa. Thank you for joining us on Upfront each Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, for a lively discussion on issues that are topical, challenging, and always engaging.
The show tries to capture that fundamentally aspirational nature of today's African youth. As you've noticed, right here on the show, we talk about everything. Nothing is off the table.
I am a social networker, often online. For me, it's all about making connections, meeting people.
Ooh, without my family, I don't think I would have been here today because they gave me a lot of support morally.
Dante, AU, African Union, can these people really solve this nonsense of rigging election, brutality during what election violence, all this whatever?
Employment rates are climbing, so definitely there's less jobs in the market now.
Remember to connect with us on Facebook and on Twitter at Upfront Africa.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
This is Science in a Minute.
Sleep deprivation has long been linked with having a higher risk for cardiovascular disease and even death from coronary heart disease. A study published in the journal Psychosomatic Medicine suggests one possible reason is that having a bad night of sleep can cause blood pressure to spike. The researchers studied 300 men and women between the ages of 21 and 70 with no history of heart problems. The participants wore portable blood pressure cuffs and had their blood pressure randomly measured over a two-day, two-night period. To gauge their sleep efficiency, they also wore devices that measured movement as they slept. The researchers found that the participants with lower sleep efficiency readings also showed an increase in blood pressure during the night and a higher systolic or upper number blood pressure the following day. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, this is Peter Clotty, host of Nightline Africa. Please join us every Saturday and Sunday at 16 and 18 hours UTC. Nightline Africa is VOA Africa's weekend show that provides news, features, and entertainment news about Africa and the world. Tune in. You will be glad you did. I guarantee it.
Join your host, Larry London, for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 22:30 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
VOA News.
When news breaks, VOA News is there. Around the clock, listen to VOA Newscast at the top of each hour, along with our detailed news programs and analysis.
We are online at voanews.com.
VOA, your trusted source of news and information.